This is episode number 550 with Jeff Bethke.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
There's a great quote out there that says, you don't marry someone you can live with. You marry the person you cannot live without. We've got Jeff Bethke in the house, and he is a blogger, author, massive YouTuber, podcast host, husband, dad. He's got over 1 million followers online, and I was first in tune to who he was about 5 years ago when he put a video out that went viral called Why I Hate Religion. And it was before its time. It was a powerful video that kind of shook the world and was a spoken word of poetry. And I thought it was really interesting and insightful how thoughtful he was. So it was fun for me to connect with him in person and have him on the podcast. And some of his YouTube videos have been viewed tens of millions of times. And he's got a book out called Love That Lasts. And what we cover today are why marriages aren't lasting these days. Now, he's a millennial, and we're talking about this from a millennial point of view as well. Also, how men can be vulnerable and strong for their partner, the relationship between vulnerability and power, why marriage will not solve your problems. Oh, this is a big one. And something that I see a lot of people getting married and then they get divorced within a few years, they think it's going to solve their problems, and it doesn't. Also, whatever you pour your energy into, you will receive back from. That and so much more in this episode. Also, big shout out to the fan and review of the week. This is from Yuri, who said, I always find great, great pieces of advice that help me focus on the inside and why it's so important to always start from within in anything. Thanks so much for the heart and soul that have been put on every show to help us listeners. Now it's time to go out there and do something great. So Yuri, thank you so much for leaving a review over on iTunes and for being the fan of the week. And if you guys want to get your chance of getting a shout out of the fan of the week, all you got to do is go over to your podcast app over on your iPhone or on iTunes, and you can leave a review right there and get your chance to be a fan shout out of the week. This full interview, show notes, and video is back at lewishouse.com/550. So make sure to take a screenshot of this. Tag Jeff over on Instagram and Twitter as well as you're listening to this, and let him know what you think about it. And let me know as well at Lewis Howes. And again, the link is lewishouse.com/550. And without further ado, let's dive into this episode with the one, the only, Jeff Bethke.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12-pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got Jeff Bethke in the house, man.
Yeah,
good to see you, brother. In from Maui for the day,
That's flying out
after this. And you've got this new book out called Love That Lasts, How We Discover God's Better Way for Love, Dating, Marriage, and Sex. And you lost your virginity when you were 16 in the back of a car in a church parking lot to someone who wasn't your girlfriend. Is that right?
I mean, that is the first three sentences of the book. So
yes.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, 16, man. That's actually before me. I was 18. I remember saying, this is, I wanted to have sex, obviously, when
yeah.
I was younger.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, there was a senior girl who was literally like the hottest girl in the school.
Yeah.
And she kept flirting with me all the time when I was a freshman. And I was so intimidated. I was so nervous. I had no clue what I was doing.
Yeah.
And there was an opportunity to go out into the woods, right?
Yeah.
And have some fun.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. Like, something inside of me was like too scared, or maybe it was my, you know, my moral values at the time.
Totally.
I was like, well, I'm going to wait or whatever. It just didn't seem right. It felt right, but it didn't seem right.
Yeah,
so
I was
conflicted. And I waited till I was 18. I was like, I'm going to wait till I'm like with someone who I really care about.
Yeah, totally.
And until I'm an adult. And then
totally.
I'm gonna, right? But you didn't do that.
No, and that's what I talk about in the book. And then the line right after the ones you just read basically says, you know, I don't say that to shock anyone. I say that's just normal. You know, statistics are showing it's 15, 16 on average. And then there's actually even some trends now, I think, because we've kind of reached the logical conclusion of an over-sexualized culture, where now the trend is actually going down. It's been going up for like 50 years of like, it's been getting sooner and sooner for, you know, young adults, teenagers,
like
and all that.
12, 13,
now it's starting
14,
to go, yeah, but now it's starting to go down.
No.
Because I feel like there's almost like a... And I think it was an Atlantic article just recently that talked about there's almost so much of an oversaturation. Kids are almost over it by this point, because by the time they're 15 and actually have any opportunity in that sense, we're so over-sexualized with pornography and movies and shows and all that, that it's almost desensitized intimacy. And that's what I talk about in the book, because it really kills intimacy in a relationship and marriage and stuff like that, that whole thought line. But yeah, it's just interesting trends for sure.
Wow. It's crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who taught you about relationships?
No one. That's what I talk about. I think I have a chapter on, you know, being addicted to porn for 8+ years, which is, again, you know, speaking of that, there's I didn't put this in the book, but I just recently read there was a guy who wanted to study effects of pornography on the brain. And so he's like, okay, well, to do that, like any good, you know, person who studies humans, you got to find two sample sizes, right? You got to find someone who has been exposed and someone who hasn't been exposed. He had to quit the study because he couldn't find anyone who had never had, you know,
exposed to pornography.
Yeah, basically who had never watched in any serious way in a large portion. And then I have another couple chapters on fatherlessness. And so then I talk about that of like, we are apprentices of something. Right? Like, I think we grow up latching onto something and we want to replicate. We attach and replicate. Like, I want to be like you. I want to look like you. I want to talk like you. I want to act like you. And I do think fathers have a huge vital role in our lives to show not just men, but also children in general, women, sons, daughters, wisdom and imparting how to find wholeness, how to find flourishing, how to find life. And when we don't, I mean, we're at the point of statistically being so dramatically fatherless, you know, that it's interesting how it's affecting us. And that's what I talk about is no one taught me. So then you just kind of play catch up, or you kind of just say, I'll just do what feels right, looks right, you know, all that
seems
stuff.
Seems cool, whatever.
Totally. And so you kind of just go in that regard.
And what do you mean we're being fatherless? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, and just statistically, like, you know, I think it's somewhere in the 60-70% range of at least 60 or 70% of people in one point in their life will not have a dad in the home, you know, growing up all the way to 18.
Oh, really?
That's
before
pretty,
18.
Yeah, exactly. Like
60 to 70%.
Yeah, not 60-70% how are fathers their whole life, but at least in some season in their 18-year children life, it's somewhere in that range, which is crazy.
What's the season mean? Like a couple months, a year?
I think just probably like either like, you know, the dad leaves at 12 or something, or the dad might leave at 3, come back at 6. Just an extended
really?
Season of like they've had
Not talking about divorce where you're splitting time, but someone leaves for an extended period of time.
Well, yeah, just like they don't have a father in their life. Wow. They don't have a presence in their life. And I think that has huge implications in the same way it would if a mother, you know, and so,
of course.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so I talk about that a lot in the book, how you just get to the place of just saying, well, I'm just going to try to figure it out on my own. And a lot of millennials, myself included, are trial and error, right? I'm going to try it. And that's what I talk about in the book. Try it. And then we get into our mid-20s. And then there's this kind of shattering moment of, oh, man, the last 7, the last 6, the last 8 years just completely put me on a really unhealthy trajectory. And now I'm finally starting to realize that. I used the analogy in the first chapter of Jenga, right? A lot of us are playing like emotional, spiritual, sexual Jenga, where it's like we pull out these pieces, which every time you pull out a piece, it makes the whole thing weaker. And I consider kind of that whole tower our humanness, right? And we keep making these choices. But when we pull that piece out, that direct second after we pull it out, it doesn't fall. And so we go, oh, okay. Like I'm fine, right? I'm fine.
Keep doing it.
And we keep doing it. And then, oh, okay, I'm fine. And then every time you do it, you're actually making your humanness weaker and weaker and weaker. And then it comes crashing down in your 20s. And that's when you realize, oh, yeah, the pieces I pulled out back then, the pieces I'm pulling out in college, pieces I'm pulling out in my young professional life, was what actually made the crumble happen. And that's kind of what I talk about in there. Or that was my story. So then I just try to unravel that.
What were you taking out?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things. Obviously, I talk about sexuality in there, pornography, even just the more big picture ideas that you can't really tangibly put down, of just trying to find wholeness and identity in the wrong things. For me, that was a sport. I was a baseball guy through and through, wanted to get drafted, wanted to play in the big leagues. I made it all the way through college, played it in college. And that became a place of like, kid, that, you know, we would never say this language, but I was very much a slave to baseball. Mm-hmm. Meaning like the how I did on the baseball field dictated my worth,
my happiness,
my worth, how my weeks went. Like you could like, my week was good or bad based or not if I was a pitcher, if I had a good game or not. Right. And I think that's, you realize kind of how weak that is, that I was defining my whole life by this little, you know, like 9-inch round thing, you know.
And isn't it funny that sometimes when I would win a game and we would do so well, but if I messed up on one thing and felt embarrassed, that would also ruin my week. Even if we won and even if I did well, and most of the time it's
totally
like if I still messed up or felt like I wasn't
totally
and who I should have been.
Totally. And I think that's in a lot of different realms of life, but specifically in a more athletic culture, because a lot of people who go that route do have this. I know I did this tendency to try to strive for perfection, strive for a certain level that maybe you can't always achieve. And so there's going to be a lot of disconnect, cognitive dissonance, and failure, which then you have to walk through. And again, no one there to shepherd you through that.
And what about your father experience? What was that like?
So my dad's around, love him. We have a relationship now. But growing up, never, my mom and dad never got married. I have a sister who's 5 years older and then they never got married then. And then my dad got custody of my sister. And then 5 years later, they got back together and had me. Mm. And so I just grew up with a single mom. My sister grew up with my dad. I grew up with my mom. And I would kind of do the every other weekend, like custody thing, you know, where I just go see my dad for a weekend and we had a good time and stuff. But yeah, not a strong presence in my life. Not certainly a presence of me asking for wisdom or insight or like that shepherding kind of mentality of just bringing me along in a gentle, tender way to teach me about life. And so to some degree, it was a bummer, but I think it makes me so grateful now having a son and a daughter, wanting to just see, man, I can be such a tender, gentle presence in their life. And I'm just super excited for that, you know, of knowing what I missed out on and how being able to actually gift that to another person, multiple persons, maybe even more if we have more kids, is really exciting to me.
Yeah. What do you think you missed out on?
I think again, that main thing, you just don't have a teacher. Like you don't realize, I mean, we don't realize that, you know, before 50 years ago, thousands of years, thousands of cultures, all religions, like predominantly had a patriarch in the family. And that word today is kind of almost like a swear word. And I agree with how it is, you know, used today of, you know, this kind of the slave master dad and all that sense. I don't mean that. I just mean literally like this guy over the family that had a vision for the family, had a vision for the marriage, wanted to love his kids, serve his kids, bring them up in truth and grace and, you know, insight and wisdom and bless them and train them up. And so, yeah, I think that's what you miss out on. You just miss out on all those micro little million things over 20 years. You know, if you think about it, 18 years before you leave the house, it's hard to even quantify, but I think it's everyone who has grown up without a dad or even had a struggled relationship with their dad can say that obviously affects them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would you say are the things that you learn, or what would you say are the things that your dad supported you with the most growing up, and what are the things that you wish he would have supported you on?
Love my dad, and I would say he was good at and this also has some problematicness to it, but he was good at showing his affection through things. I mean, I don't always think that is the best way.
Gifts.
And yeah, stuff, yeah. And I get that, right? Like if I didn't, if I had a son that I didn't see for 2 weeks,
yeah,
then I would want to make those 48 hours just straight birthday parties,
yeah,
right? Just like ragers. And we're just going to go all out. We're going to eat the cake. We're going to go to the, you know, Lego store. We're going to go to this. And I get that. Like, that makes logical sense to want to do that if you only have your kid for 48 hours every couple of weeks. Because you know you have these finite moments to try to create an impression, create a relationship. Yeah. And especially a dad's heart to provide and a dad's heart for provision. But I think sometimes, you know, any kids who's been in that situation realizes, no, I wanted your heart. I wanted you to connect with me. I wanted you to give me wisdom and insight and ask me the hard questions and not let me kind of go through life blindfolded or dark or unaware, right? And the cool part is, I think, you know, and this is through, I think I've heard you talk about mentorship, you know, on your stuff. And, you know, it took me a while, but then, you know, I'm so grateful now of almost what I would almost call like emotional and spiritual fathers now, right?
Yeah.
Of people that have, man, have really, really helped me and come alongside me and say, hey, here's, you know, I've been married for 30 years. Here's a couple pieces of advice, you know, and I've been, I've been running this business for 30 years. Here's a couple pieces of advice. And so I think now in my young 20s, I think I'm very much looking for that. And it's been, and then to see how, oh, this is how it should be. Right, that we are created for this kind of like up and down apprenticeship relationship. And I think that's how all of life gets passed down. And it's tended to be through the family, but I also think it's cool that there's, you know, a ton of opportunities to get it through just community and friends and people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that your parents never got married?
I don't know. I'd have to ask that question. I don't, well, it might've been partly age. My mom was like 18 in that realm and my dad was like 30 something.
Wow.
So that has its own set of problems.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's somewhere in that realm, but my wife always laughs at me. She's like, you never ask any of the questions. And I'm kind of like, you know, not like I'm trying to hide from it or anything. I just kind of like grew up with that reality. And so I just assumed this is normal. This is reality. And so then
sure.
I'm starting to realize through her saying, oh, you know, ask the same questions. I mean, not realizing having an answer. I'm like, oh, I never asked. And so I'm in this kind of season of like trying to figure that out too. And and there's some cool insight, you know, when you talk to your mom, and you talk to your dad and say, hey, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? Cause again, learning from people who've gone before you, including your parents, is really pivotal.
Why is marriage important to you right now?
Yeah. And so marriage is super important to me because I'm married, I would probably say, with kids. And I think everyone has a different philosophy of life. But for me, I've found a lot of joy from not everyone needs to be married, right? I think everyone needs to be the best version of themselves, whether you're single, engaged, dating, married, old, young, white, black, you know, artist, businessman, whatever. Be the best version of you that you can be. But for me, I'm married and this is what I do. And so for me, I'm starting to realize that there's a lot of joy in and I've even started to kind of study a little bit of just kind of past society civilizations, that there's a lot to be said of the marriage unit and the family unit to some degree is an epicenter that flows out into good business, good art, good culture, creating. And that's what I feel like I'm learning right now, is I feel like a lot of dads sacrifice their families and their marriage on the altar of work and success and all these things. When I'm saying, okay, if I can be the best dad and husband, then first of all, that's all I care about, right? Like, I don't care if I'm famous in the world. I care if I'm famous to my two kids. But then on top of that, I also think when I am the best version of myself in the family unit, in the marriage unit, then I also feel like that frees me up in an emotional, healthy way to bless and turn around and give culture something that's worth receiving. Because I feel like if you're doing the opposite, sacrificing them for going your dreams, your visions, your whatever, then I also think, first of all, that's kind of like cheap. And I don't think the art speaks for itself and usually doesn't last. Or at least that's maybe just me. But when I see someone who's really successful, I say, what's your definition of success? You might have a lot of money, but your kids and your wife hate you, right? That doesn't seem awesome to me. But yeah.
Is there a way to create a win-win where you can
totally
not sacrifice your dreams?
Totally. I think
for where you could actually impact the world and actually serve a larger family.
Totally.
As opposed to stay stuck.
Totally.
With three people.
Totally.
That need 100% of your attention and time 24 hours a day.
Yes.
What is that doing to you?
So,
and robbing the world of your gifts.
Totally. And thanks for asking the clarifying question, because I agree. I'm not definitely not this juxtaposition of either or. I just think it's what's the line, right? What's the kind of this natural progression? And for me, it's if you have a family and are married, not if you aren't, if you have a family and you're married, when you work on this, I think you will see blessing coming over here. I think you will see your business get better, your art get better, your relational dynamics with your employees get better. And think about how, I mean, even get really meta for a second, right? Talk about the identity of a family. Most families who are very strong and who are very, understand kind of what a marriage and a family is, those are usually the people that, you know, pass on empires for generations, mm-hmm. right? Like some of the biggest business we know, like the boardroom is usually a family, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of us are actually we work for the company to serve their family's vision, right? Even though you would never say that because that's the family's name's not on the thing, but well, a lot of times it actually is. The last name is the company. So I think there's something to be said of just a bigger vision. And I think it comes down to multiplication or addition, right? So for me, I believe that in 50 years, because a lot of us don't have long enough vision. We want to try to get everything we can, build as much as we can by the time we die. I believe by the time I die, hopefully there's still 200-400 years of multiplication that's going to happen after that because of the 80 years of foundation I've set, right? We don't have a long enough vision. And the thing that happens because of that is what happens is a lot of us don't have that vision, and so we don't create processes and things to make that happen. When in reality, if you, like multiplication is better addition, and what I meant by that is, you know, if I'm going to pour into these two kids, these three kids, these four kids, this family, my wife, you know, our vision as a family, I do believe a couple hundred years from now that if they're doing that, if they get that vision, if they get that, and then they also turn around and then multiply that and go affect two people with that vision, that's multiplication. And you just do the math, like 50, 100 years from now, that's thousands and thousands of dozens of thousands of people. But if you just try to add people, meaning just like I'm just going to add employees and go add an employee, addition never gets you nearly as far as multiplication does.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Why do you think so many marriages aren't working? You know, I think it's more than 50% divorce rate. Roughly, I'm not sure. And then you probably ask the people that are married, you know, which ones of them are actually successful in terms of thriving and feel supported and feel loved and are, you know, still intimate in a loving way, you know, maybe 50% of those, I don't know. So, you know, is marriage something for that we should all be striving for? What is, and is it still relevant to where we're at in our lives?
Totally.
Based on the history of what marriage was intended for.
Totally. Definitely not think it's something everyone should strive for. Definitely at the camp of just like, do your thing, you know, like whatever you want to do, go do it. But a lot of people do have the desire. A lot of people want to get married. A lot of people want to build a family and have dreams and visions of that. And so what I would say to those people, if there's a specific group of people listening who either don't believe anymore or having a hard spot, I mean, to ask why our marriage is not successful, I mean, that's like, shoot, we could talk for 10 million hours, right? But I'll try to the most common theme that I usually see, and by the way, it feels so awkward talking about relationships, you know, in an expert fashion when I'm like 28, and you know, it's like we almost joked that this book should have been called Love That Lasts? Right? It's like,
right.
We don't know. Right?
Yeah. How long have you been married for?
5 years.
Yeah.
But there is, like, it's this tension of, like, we have no idea and we want to sit in that humility. But there is, I think, something to be said of, okay, we are building processes and we are putting our life in a trajectory that we are starting to see fruit from that a lot of our peers and a lot of my friends are not falling into, right? A lot of my friends, you know, divorced within 2 years,
yeah,
you know, and pornography addiction just blowing up their marriage,
especially in like the church world or
sometimes And sadly it's just as common.
Yeah.
But, so I'm not saying we're experts in any regards, but I do think we're starting to learn a thing or two. And one thing I've realized is
5 years of marriage is pretty successful in terms of like
the
most
world.
People,
totally.
Most
people
getting divorced after
true.
A couple. Yeah.
To me, I feel like, man, we're still babies, which we are, but you're right. According to, you know, that's like the Hollywood marriage right there, right? Yeah. It's like you've been married a long time if you've been married 7 years. I think that's what they call like the magic seven. So we're almost there. Woo. But what I would say is there's this idea and this concept of confusion between covenant relationships, contract relationships. And this is one of the biggest things that I think has destroyed a lot of marriages. And what I mean by that is there's only two human relationships in all of life. It's covenant relationships, contract relationships. Let me break that down. Contract relationship is any relationship you have with another person. That one we get. It's any relationship you have with a person where there's a contract involved, where there's an agreement involved that you're going to keep up your behavior, and then that will be the glue for the relationship. Or another way I put it is like the behavior is stronger than the promise, right? Mm-hmm. Like I promise to give you a job, but if your behavior is bad enough, you're fired, right? That's like at our jobs, yes. You know, so it's like that's a contract relationship. That's normal. That's fine. That's great. But that should be in its context, in its zone. The hard part is when we take that into covenant relationships. There's only two covenant relationships in all of life, and that's the marriage, and that's the parent-kid relationship. And a covenant's the exact opposite, right? So this one is behavior stronger than the promise. This one's promise stronger than the behavior, right? Like when's the last time like 10-year-old Johnny spills Fruity Loops on the floor, and you go, oh, you stupid idiot, get out of the family, I never want to see you
you're
again.
You're fired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, give me your uniform back, give me your name tag back. I'll take that last name. Thanks for having it for a couple years, but you're good, right?
Yeah,
no one does that.
Doesn't happen.
But what happens is, the huge confusion happened, and this is partly, you can partly trace it to the Industrial Revolution, you can partly change it to the Sexual Revolution, you can partly change it to just around the globalization of the world in like the 40s and 50s, but we have taken this contract relationships and put that, not into the parent-kid one yet, but it has definitely infected marriages, right? In the sense of like, that's actually what we believe about a marriage. It's a contract, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you mess up bad enough, see ya. I don't want to hang out with you anymore. And like, oh, your life's falling to pieces? No, I'm good. I'm glad we signed the prenup, right?
So you're saying it should be a covenant relationship.
Covenant relationship, meaning
it's not a contract.
Not a contract relationship. Or I think it's best and it fires on all cylinders when it's a covenant relationship. And here's why. Here's when the rubber meets the road. First of all, make it clear as day, I'm not talking about the exceptions of like, you know, domestic violence and abuse and serial adultery. Not talking about that. I'm talking about the marriages where they basically just say like, it got really hard and it was not fulfilling me. I need to go. And that's what a lot of people say, right? I was even just at the airport a little bit ago, and that's what literally someone said. I was hearing them over talk to a couple, and he's like, we didn't love each other anymore. It's like, well, what? Last time I checked, it's an action, not a feeling. But we have to work on that because it does feel like a feeling in our culture, right? And so we have to work on making an action. Back to the covenant thing, here's where the rubber meets the road, right? In a contract, you can never truly be you, right? Think about that. Like, marriage was created to be this bed of a lacquer term, lack of a better term, or the center of intimacy of like, this is going to be the place where you are going to be known so deeply more than any other relationship you have in your life. Right. And that is going to be a place of flourishing and of health and of beauty. That's going to make you go out into all your other relationships and have a lot of vitality and life and strength. But contract, you can never be honest. Because why? If you're bad enough and if you're honest enough and if you take off the mask and you're truly vulnerable, well, then you're fired. Right. Like, oh, I didn't sign up for that. Mm-hmm. I didn't sign up for that. But the power of a covenant relationship is when they take off the mask, you say, I still see you, I still want you, and I'm not going anywhere. And anyone who's ever had any experience with that, not even in marriage, but just in any setting of like friendship, parents, whatever, of like you take off the mask and you feel like you had a moment of vulnerability and someone receives you in that is one of the most powerful moments of your life. Hands down, right? So imagine a relationship where you're together 50 years and you have that day in, day out, day in, day out. That's super, super powerful. Mm-hmm. But because we have a contract relationship, we're never honest and it blocks intimacy, hurts the relationship, and you can never be vulnerable and you can never be honest. And that's, I think, that misunderstanding has caused a lot of pain in relationships because I know for me and my wife, like there's no one who will ever know me better than her, ever. Even 5 years in, she knows things that no one will ever know. She knows how I operate more than anyone. And the reason is because we've committed when we promised to each other 5 years ago that we are going to hide nothing. We're going to be radically on the table with everything and honest and vulnerable. And there's these moments where we look at each other again and say, I receive you. And that's, it's kind of like, you know, for lack of a better term, it's like this nakedness, right? And I think that's what marriage is. It's supposed to be this, you're supposed to be able to have this relationship of nakedness where they see everything that you are emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and they say, I still want you. And then take sex for that, by the way. That's a really fun picture of sex of like, okay, then sex becomes an outplay of that dance, right? Sex is not this thing to give you a bunch of pleasure, but sex is just the kind of the cherry on top to play that drama out of like sex is these two bodies coming together saying, I see all that you are and I still want to be one with you. And I think that's a really, really powerful recipe for a successful marriage. But
wow. What are some of the things that you share, the radically honest things that you share with your wife that maybe you wouldn't share with others?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I can't actually think of anything right now specifically that like, you know, just like, oh, I've shared the specific fact with her that no one knows. But I would say, yeah, there's a level.
Do you share feelings of there's a woman over there that I'm like super attracted to. Like, would you say something like that if it's in your mind? Like, oh, let me be honest.
I think we have a concept of radical honesty in our marriage. And so, yeah, if something like that came along, then yeah, I think I would be.
Right.
I think of more, the things that more play out day in and day out for us is the feelings of like our, you know, I kind of call it the little boy and the little girl, right? Like inside of us that we all, the insecurities,
how I'm feeling,
the things that I would never share, the things that I tried to use my life to cover up. Those are those moments of, she knows like my triggers. She knows, the things that I am ashamed of. She knows the things that
What are you ashamed of?
Well, I mean, again, I can't think of any specific example. I'm trying to think. No, it's a good question. I think insecurity would be the biggest one that plays out most often in our relationship. And I think that's a
true. You feel insecure?
Yeah, just in general. I think a lot of people do.
Well, don't project.
No, totally. I think everyone asks similar questions, and I ask these too, of who am I? Why am I here? Am I good? I think specifically men, and I'd love to even hear with your research in the book, of we kind of ask these questions of, am I good enough? Do I actually have what it takes? I have this burning desire in me to create, to build, to do something, to lead. Can I actually do it? Now, again, we don't ever just voice that in the boardroom or whatever, but I think, you know, having those seasons or moments.
I've had
seasons of clinical depression, you know, and I've talked about, and so to be able to have someone that you can be that radically vulnerable and honest with is really powerful. But, you know.
And someone who supports you in those moments that doesn't just make you wrong or make you, you know,
totally
bring you down.
And thanks
say,
for reminding
say,
me.
Say man up. Quit totally. Being a wuss, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and thanks for reminding me of that. Like that's why it's scary. Like it's not like, oh, this is all lovey fuzzy and you're, it's scary to be vulnerable because there's always the possibility of that person on the other side saying, no, I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm good. And I think, but here's the choice every person watching has to make. If you want to know true love, and I don't mean relationally, I just mean like the capacity of humans to love, right? Friends, people, relationships, the thing that gives you that feeling of like, not just feeling, but that like, you know, you're created for this capacity of love. To know that, you have to be vulnerable. I think it was C.S. Lewis, the famous author in the, you know, 50s, wrote Chronicles of Narnia and a bunch of other famous books, fiction and nonfiction, who said to love is to be vulnerable. And he kind of goes on this riff after that, where he basically says, like, you got a choice. You can totally be non-vulnerable. You can take your heart and put it up in a cage and lock it up and make sure no one ever touches it. No one ever sees it. The minute anyone even gets close or sniffs out some vulnerability in you, you run away and you break that relationship. He goes, you can do that. You'll never know love though. Like you can do that. Go ahead. But you'll never know the true capacity for human relationships because it's a trade-off. To be vulnerable is to know true love. And you have to be coming from a place of security and wholeness to be able to put yourself in that vulnerable position. And so that's usually what I tell people first too, is like, yeah, it is scary, but you also have to know that no matter who it is, even spouse included, which I talk about too, like Alyssa is not the end all be all voice over me. And I know that sounds weird, but what I mean by that is like, she, even at the end of the day, like, I'm not a slave to her reaction to me. Does that make sense? And so I think with that, when you're secure in that, then that can now open you up to do it more. And then it creates this really beautiful cycle.
Yeah. How much is too vulnerable in a relationship? When women, you know, let me speak in general terms. Some women say they want their man to be open and vulnerable and to share what's on their mind and do these things.
Yeah.
But then when they hear them being vulnerable over and over, they're like, okay, actually, you know, I need you to be a little stronger. I need you to be stable for me. I need you to be strong. I need you to be here because if you're really weak right now, then I'm not going to feel secure in my life.
Totally.
And I need you to like not say that anymore.
Totally.
You know, it's kind of like this conflict that men would go through at times, right? Again, not all men,
not
women.
We have to be the stable anchor.
Yeah. And so women will say sometimes that they want certain things, but then when you give it to them and they say, actually, just man up. Like, can't show emotion right now. Like, I need you to be strong.
Totally.
Otherwise, I'm going to break down.
Totally.
How does a man navigate that situation where they feel like, okay, I want to be open and not like lock my heart away and share with the most intimate person in my life.
Yeah.
But she's telling me I'm wrong for this. Like, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this.
Yeah.
And it's constantly in conflict.
Yeah.
So how can a man show up powerfully and vulnerable so that he feels heard and seen? And how can women support the men in their lives to be that as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I fully know the answer, but I would say that the paradox that I guess plays out, at least in our marriage and marriages of our friends and people I've heard that are older than us, is there's this weird thing. I think sometimes that's and this is a little different, but sometimes we believe the lie of like, we can't be honest because like what you said, we need to hold the family together. But there's this power of like, leading with vulnerability creates, and I'm not saying that like the family, like the guy's the head of it, you know, but I'm just meaning like you can lead and as an example to your kids and your wife and your family, in regards to vulnerability. And it's a bummer if the wife reacts like that, if there's marriages in this room, and I get that. And I mean, listening, that's hard, because then what that says, that what that does is that stops the cycle of vulnerability.
Yeah.
If you share, and then a lot of us have this as kids, this happens with parents, right? Like you have the dad who just says like, shut up, get over it, stop crying, which is so brutal to kids, right? And so detrimental to their life. And that a lot of us are still unpacking in our 20s. But I think it's because that vulnerability cycle was cut off by someone not receiving the vulnerability. So that's hard. And I get that. And that happens. But you kind of then have to get back to the security of yourself. And like I said, and that wholeness and flourishing. But what I would say is don't always buy the lie though, too, of like, like basically what I'm saying is when it plays out with us, it's like sometimes I'll do that. I'll share and be honest and vulnerable. I'm really struggling with this, or man, I'm feeling a little uneasy about this decision we might make or whatever. And Alyssa says, oh, thanks. Like I was feeling that too, but I didn't know until you said it, or I wasn't sure. Or like basically vulnerability has this power to draw others out. And it's kind of like, I think it goes with anyone listening for business, right? Like I want to work for a boss who he goes first. Right? Like if someone's going to walk into the fire, he goes first. If someone's going to be vulnerable, he goes first, right? Rather than this boss that just demands something from his employees that he'll never do. And I think that comes with the vulnerability and a lot of other traits that we have an opportunity as men to actually lead with that vulnerability. And it's so countercultural, right? Like it's so like for a man to be vulnerable, when I actually think a man being vulnerable is a picture of power. Right? That it's not just a man being vulnerable, but that's actually a powerful man who's very secure in himself.
Yeah.
A man who can cry, a man who can be emotional, a man who can feel, because we're taught so from such a young age, do not feel, do not feel. And I think that's super, super hurtful and super detrimental to our society.
Yeah. What about millennial marriages? You know, we talked about how people get married and then they divorce within a couple of years. It's kind of the trend right now. Why do people get married so quickly when they actually don't know anything about this person?
Totally.
You meet them for 6 months or a year and you think you know everything about them, or it's like you have this connection.
Totally.
Why get married so quickly when you're just like, well, we know. Mm-hmm. We know. But do you really know?
Yeah. Like, no, totally.
Because 1 year,
yeah.
I mean, people live together for a lifetime with their kids and they don't know still about like who they are and constantly growing and evolving. What would you say it would be sound wisdom to set millennial couples up for long lasting success in terms of like staying together and feeling like they're thriving in their love?
Totally.
What would you suggest?
Don't go into, again, this is speaking just people who, if that's the desire that they want to, you know, they want to get married, it's a goal of theirs. Don't go into it looking for something I cannot give. Marriage will not fully satisfy you. Marriage will not be the answer to all your problems. Marriage will actually be the opposite. Like if you got problems, marriage is going to expose them. If you have bad parts about yourself, marriage is going to make those more amplified. If you have a little bit of an anger problem, get married. You have a big anger problem. you got a little bit of a porn addiction, get married. You have a worse porn addiction.
Wow.
You know, be really frustrated with your kids and just kind of be a domineering leader. Get married. That'll be worse. It actually kind of pulls these things out, and that gets to the goal of marriage. To me, I don't see the marriage is like, this is going to lead to my ultimate fulfillment and happiness. Those are byproducts. Those do happen in a healthy relationship, and I'm so thankful for them. I see marriage as primarily the not only the vehicle of vulnerability, but the primary vehicle for making me into who I want to be. Because when you have someone that close to you, when you have someone that close to you and you're waking up next to them every single day, you cannot hide anymore. Which means they're very easily and quickly going to see all your shortcomings, all your failures, and all of that junk that you can kind of hide from friends, family, the internet, employees, whatever. And so, but marriage, you just can't functionally do it when you're in that close of a space. And what it does then is it brings these things to the surface. And for me, like, I welcome that. Me and Alyssa very quickly from the beginning said, that is one of the goals of marriage, is this is going to bring this stuff up. And now I'm going to know what I need to work on. Now I'm going to know what I need to grow at. Well, now I'm going to know what, like, oh, that's actually, like, we have things in us that we're able to mute and sanitize that are actually worse in the depths of our soul than we think. And I think marriage is a really good opportunity to see what those things are. And for me, when you welcome it, then you realize, like, man, functionally saying, I think I've grown more in the last 5 years than I have in my entire life. And I think that's mainly why, because I'm so able to have a partner along with me in this journey who we are able to kind of, it's kind of like, you sharpen a knife with another sharp thing or with another hard piece of iron or something like that, right? Like, it takes these two things to sharpen each other. And that's what I think marriage should be. And you'll be severely disappointed if you get married thinking it'll just lead to all your fulfillment and happiness. Mm-hmm. And then that happens. And that's where most of the divorces come from, is that huge cognitive dissonance and disconnect from, oh my goodness, I didn't sign up for this. And I think just being aware of what you're actually getting into is then like, oh yeah, this is hard, and this is a hard season, and man, we're financially bootstrapped, and man, the kids are being really tough right now, and man, relationally, our marriage is not, we're not connecting, I don't see you, we're just busy. But when you realize the actual big picture, meta picture of what's going on, I think it allows you to walk through it. Just the awareness is like 90% of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I would say to that. And then practically speaking, how do you make sure you're not getting in something crazy? I always tell, you know, my friends who are dating and not married or even just looking or whatever, I just tell them like hang out with that person with your friends, like, because that'll show you their true selves, right? Your boyfriend is a different guy when he's with your girlfriends than when you're just making out and watching a Netflix movie late at night, right? That won't show you what marriage is going to do for you, right? The Netflix and chill. What'll show you what marriage is actually going to be like is hanging out in community with other people. Same goes with parents, right? Like, I always tell ladies, if you want to know what your boyfriend is probably going to be like 5 years in marriage, look how he treats his mom. Guaranteed it'll be an exact picture of how he treats you. Right? Because once the fuzziness wears off and the butterflies wear off and it's just a covenant relationship, which a parent-kid relationship is, that's how he's going to treat you. And another way to say it too is like, if I always try to tell ladies, like, how should you know if you should break up with someone or if your guy's good news or bad news? If, like, imagine having a kid that's exactly like your boyfriend, and if that makes you cringe, you should probably break up. Like, if you have a son, if you know your son's going to grow up to be just like your boyfriend in 20 years and that makes you cringe, then yeah, that's probably not a healthy relationship, right?
Right.
You should say, like, yeah, he's not perfect and he's not awesome and he's a lot of failures, but he leads with truth and he leads with love, yeah. Right? And he leads with passion and all those things. So yeah, that's what I would say to that practically, if that helps.
What would you say is the biggest inner demon that you're facing right now?
Good question.
That's coming up in your relationship or in your life
Good question.
That's being amplified because of marriage.
It's a really good question. Right now, I'd probably say, I'm not trying to like neutralize it in any sense because we've worked through some serious big things previously in our marriage. But the one right now doesn't sound as big, but I do feel like just, man, like lack of discipline. Like, and I know that sounds weird, but like marriage just exposes how.
Like sloppiness.
Or... Yeah, sloppy, that's a good word. Of just like, man, I am responsible for like not just myself anymore. Right? And like putting food in the kids' mouths and stuff like that. And you just realize how your little decisions are amplified, right? Like sloppiness and just having be organized and to be disciplined. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound like an inner demon, but it kind of is, because it actually can wreak some serious havoc on your life in regards to just being It just exposes it, right? It just exposes it. And earlier in life, I would probably, earlier in our marriage, I'd probably say a more serious one would probably be just like the lack of father in the home led to some not unhealthy, like super unhealthy emotional patterns, but just like I didn't know how to fight well. And I mean, and here's what I always tell couples now of like, mm-hmm. every couple is going to fight.
Yes.
You just need to learn how to fight well.
Yes.
And healthy.
And what did that look like then for you?
I was very much like, and it was out of insecurity. It took me a couple of years to realize this. I would be the person where me and Alyssa would get in an argument. I'm the person where I like to finish it and remember being like, just,
I'm right. Yeah, last word.
Totally. Like, and I want to finish it. I want to say the last word. And also I don't want you to have like an hour, to like go process it and come back. Like I'm geared up right now. Like we need to finish this
complete.
Talk. Yeah. Complete it. So I can just move on. Cause if we don't, then it's just, my head's just buzzing while mm-hmm. like, right. But she is the opposite, right? She's the opposite where she doesn't like to have a constructive conversation until she's had some serious time to process.
Gosh, the worst.
Yeah, I know,
right?
You have
to wait to come back.
I know, like, and I'm just, exactly, and I'm just like a verbal throw-upper, right? and so it's just, talk about a recipe for not success right there, right?
Yeah,
like that is the one where the arguments were, you don't realize these, again, big picture things that are playing out, but that's the dance that played out with every argument with us of like, no, like you got to like stay here. And then she feels very much like, no, I just need time to process. Like you're killing me, you know? And then I'm just like, what are you talking about? Just like, we're talking, just answer the question, whatever, you know? Everyone's been there who has that relational dynamic. You got to dig, right? And so I started to dig and I realized, okay, a lot of that's insecurity. Partially it's my personality. I like to finish just conversations so my brain's not going crazy. Partially it was insecurity of like, I think I traced it to fatherlessness, kind of the abandonment of me growing up, not in a super healthy environment at home. And what I mean by that is like, no, I was really fearful that if she walks away and this isn't finished, like we're not good. Like I didn't like leaving it on uneven terms. Does that make sense? Because that terrified me. Well, what if, like, yeah. you know what I mean? Like it kind of brought up all that kid stuff of like, oh, is she gonna, you know, abandon me, or abandonment issues and leaving issues and rejection issues, all that stuff that bubbles that up. And so that's a really good example, I think, of the question you asked of like that amplified that. And we've been processing it together and it takes time, but it's, man, you just see it. Once you label things, once you see it, man, that's 90% of the battle. Mm-hmm. Of like, we're just like, oh, no, go process, go chill. Like, I need to work on myself. Like, that's a lie I'm believing right now that's playing out in this argument, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It'd be what would you say is missing in your marriage?
Sleep, right? You got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. No, what's missing in a marriage? I think a ton, right? Like, I just so want to grow and learn from people who have gone before us. And not just in marriage, but I mean, just again, as an entrepreneur, a businessman, hopefully a leader, hopefully a good dad. So I would say just a bajillion things. I can't think of anything right now, but everything. That's what I'm going to say. Like I feel like I wake up almost feeling like the day is about trying to learn more, acquire mm-hmm. more, get more, and not in the sense of like wealth or success, but I mean like I want to continue to grow.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you could scale your marriage from a 1 to 10, mm. 10 being like fairy tales.
Just and killing it.
Like unicorn. It's like
yeah, everything. The Disney movies,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Where would you rank your marriage life with all the kids, with this, with the, you know, everything that's happening, mm-hmm. where would you rank it with your situation where you guys are at? And it doesn't mean like you got to be killing it financially and killing
totally.
It here for it to be a 10, but just,
you mean just
like,
kind of like the pulse.
Yeah. Yeah. Where would you rank it? And let's start with that first.
That's a really good question. I don't, man, tough question. Like rank your marriage, but I get the question. I'd probably say I feel like we're at an 8 right now.
And what would it take like, for it to be a 10?
I think every marriage who brings kids into the relationship can understand this. You almost have to start back at 0.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like adding the kids, but it's like, okay, we have to learn a whole new rhythm.
Oh my God.
A whole new way of living, whole new way. And I think the one thing that every marriage can relate to with young kids is like you lose your connect time. Right. You lose like what I like to say is like a lot of times marriages are facing out into the world. They're facing like they have a mission. It's either the kids or the job or whatever. And you're facing out into the world. But what you realize is if you're always shoulder to shoulder facing out into the world and you're not looking eye to eye, then you're going to lose intimacy.
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game. Or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
Right? You're going to be going on a fun mission and it's going to be fulfilling, but you also need the eye to eye. You need the shoulder to shoulder and you need the eye to eye. And I think the eye to eye is what gets lost a lot of times with the young kids, just purely out of function. Mm. Like you're literally just feeding them and wiping the diapers and throwing it away and doing this. And then it's 6 o'clock. You're like, I'm ready for bed. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think really making it such a priority, anyone who has kids out there to make, and this is what I like to say, like me and Alyssa like to say, we are not afraid to be honest with our kids that the marriage is more important than them. And what I mean by that is like, they're going to leave. Hopefully the marriage doesn't, right? Like they are going to leave. The marriage will not leave. And what happens is a lot of families who put so much centering on this, this is more like, you know, not unhealthy families, but this one happens usually in the ones that have the picture of a healthy family of like the suburbia, the kids go to soccer and have all these things. And the kids are just so surrounded with love and encouragement, but it almost suffocates them. And then what happens is the kids go off to college and then the parents are like, who are you? Oh, I think I've seen you before. Did I meet you like 20 years ago? Right. And it's like, that's pretty much what happens. You just like, you've not connected with your spouse in like 20 years. And so, we are very honest to say like, no, we're going on a date night and we're not going to see you tonight. You know, and like, you know, our grandma's coming over and to be able to carve intentional time. We also do this thing once a week where we pretty much call it like our marriage journal. And we just have these 7 questions we ask ourselves every week. Carve out time, go to a coffee shop, do it late at night while you're watching Netflix, whatever it is, but get out the notebook and ask you and be intentional with your relationship. Because whenever you're pouring into, you will receive pouring out back. Whatever you're pouring into, whatever you're dumping your energy into, you will get returns. And so make sure those things are the right things.
Yeah. How does religion support or hurt marriages?
Good question. There's a bunch of different ways to answer that one. I'll say this, and this is, and it's no, you know, people only have to spend 5 seconds on YouTube to realize I'm the crazy Jesus guy. So it's like, there's no hiding that there. I like to say, yes, it is very, very weird and ridiculous to say I follow a guy who lived 2000 years ago, blue collar rabbi, peasant worker who died, you know, was basically executed by, you know, Julius Caesar. Like, I know that's very weird to say, not as weird to, you know, pretty much worship alcohol, sex, or money or success, which a lot of other millions of people do. And they don't think that's weird. But anyways, moving on. What I would say is, so with that, like, go back to the covenant contract thing, right? When I talk about the covenant contract, that's a huge thing that I think also totally manifests itself in religion with marriage, right? Like, here's for me personally, being a follower of Jesus, I understand that God's relationship with me is a covenant, not a contract. And again, think of how many people think God, or why they said bye to him as a kid or left Sunday school or whatever, they usually think God's a contract, right? Like if you mess up bad enough, God doesn't want you anymore. Like, he's just going to throw the towel on you and you're not really that awesome. Yeah, you're going to hell, all that stuff. When I think God's a covenant God, and that word literally comes from the Bible hundreds of times. And again, it's that same concept of, I think God wants that drama to play out of, like, I love you with a covenantal love. And then what happens is then you realize, okay, then I can be vulnerable and honest with him and receive that, be who I am right now in my messiness, in my frailty, and then walk into freedom. And I think that's that whole dynamic, that plus the marriage, plus that, just plays out like crazy. And I think, you know, at least the Christian tradition would make the argument that God set up marriage to be a divine drama of the outplay of him and us. Right? There's this, like, that dynamic of the husband and wife, two yet coming together as one, the covenantal love. And God, it's almost like God was kind of, you know, in Genesis, like pulling back the curtain and kind of saying, you know, like, hey, this is what I'm like. I kind of want to put something down there for you guys to kind of maybe get an idea of what I'm like. And so I'll, boom, there's a marriage, right? Mm-hmm. The way you guys love each other, the way you guys forgive each other, the way you guys never leave each other, that is what I'm like. And man, you might not agree with that, but man, that certainly is not usually the people's first thought of when they think of religion or, you know, Christianity or, mm-hmm. or whatever. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, but that's what I would say.
Yeah.
I love the deep, you're scaring me with the sighs and the deep breaths. But I do like them.
Mm-hmm. How do people get the courage to speak up about the values that they have, even if they're not popular values?
Good question.
Or even if it's going to hurt someone or upset someone.
Yeah, I think you just have to be coming from an anchored place. Like I said, the first question you always have to ask is, here's a better way to put it. If you live by people's approval, you will die by their rejection, hands down. Hands down, right? So you need to ask yourself, do I live by people's approval? Does what people say about me actually give me, like, does that actually what fills the gas tank for me to run? And a lot of people, yes. A lot of people, that's why they're trying to build big businesses. That's why they're trying to make a really perfect suburbia family. That's why they would, so that someone out there will say that they're loved and awesome and affirmed and great and whatever. You got to ask that question first, because that's a really bad place to be. It's unhealthy. It's hard. And it just doesn't lead to any joy, right? Anyone who's been in that cycle, myself included, of living for the praise of other people, it doesn't get you anywhere. And it's kind of like the carrot on the stick, you know, it's just right out in front of you and you feel like you can never get it. And then on top of that, the minute they reject you, devastated. When in reality, if you're more centered, more anchored and more whole in yourself and not tied to them, then I think what that does is then that frees you up to be honest and share and have courage and still do it kindly and gently and not just being crazy, you know, like a lot of, but yeah, you can do it from a healthier place where you realize, like, oh yeah, that does hurt. Like, I wanted that friendship. I really liked that person. Mm-hmm. Oh man, that was really hard to share with my parents, but I'm in a good place still. And that's different.
What do you get to step into to become a better man?
What do you mean?
What's the thing that you haven't stepped into yet that will make you a better man, a better husband, a better father?
Good question.
In the world?
Oh, I don't know. How would you answer that? And I just mean, because I'm trying to like think of like, yeah, where I would go or what you mean.
I'd probably say, you know, having more courage in certain situations and, you know, not being afraid of reactions or certain things like that.
Okay, now I get it.
Having kind of that.
I would probably say, similar, but then also a little more tied to like risk in general of just like, not being afraid to risk. I think, again, and having to know this in myself, that if I can get myself to a healthy place, then you can risk more because you know it's not the end all be all. Still being smart with that risk. But I think a lot of times anyone who's had a significant season of insecurity, whether that's a parent that was never around or whatever, you really struggle with risk because risk is the thing that can hurt you. Right. If you risk, well, you know, you might lose it all. You might lose it all. You might go off the cliff. You might be rejected. You might whatever. So I'd say risk. I think I'm still really kind of in the middle of that one, not over it for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
If men grow up without fathers, and I think you said 60-70% of men.
At least in some point. Yeah.
At some point. What's the best solution for younger boys to learn healthy views of masculinity?
Find a dad and just like straight up, just go put it on a telephone pole. right? Go put it on like Craigslist.
Missing dad.
Yeah, seriously, like
here's my number.
Exactly. And you mean the more appropriate term we usually use for that is like mentor, spiritual father. Yeah, yeah. But go find it. Like there's so many people who have lived such amazing, beautiful lives who I know, having talked to a lot of old people, because I'm such a believer in mentorship, old people, like it's just some demographic out there, older people, is they want, like, they've earned it. They want to give it to someone. Like, they've lived a beautiful and amazing life. Not everyone, but the people who have, and you, like, basically, here's another way I put it, and kind of what I did. Like, I found, I literally found a family and a dad that I wanted to be like. And then I just said, can we come hang out? Can we come to dinner? Can we chill? Can we talk after the kids go down? Can I call you? Can we Skype? Just, you got to go for it, right? And what that does is that has had profound implications, not only in my marriage, but manhood and stuff of that nature. So, like, yeah, go find someone who you want to be like and ask them to take you under their wing. And I think, again, we're so individualistic in the West. This has literally been something for thousands of years that cultures, that's how they've actually passed on information, is mentorship and apprenticeship. Even skills, like literally think about the way the blacksmith got his skill was because the blacksmith before him. And we're really good at that. Guys are really good at that with business, but I think we can do a lot better about like the man's heart, the man's brain, the man's like, I want to be a better dad. I want to be a better husband. I just want to be a better man. Like I want to be kinder, more gentle. I want to just risk more. I want to love more. I want to be more adventurous. Then go find that person and go ask him, hey, can we just kick it once a week or twice a week?
What do you think is your definition of masculinity? What should it be?
Oh, that's a good question. There's a lot of different ways to go with that one too. For me, the first thing that popped in my head was Jesus. Now that sounds interesting. Think about how Jesus is not your average man. The dude cried. The dude seemed like, I mean, first of all, the dude got murdered by Rome. Like he didn't, you know, pick up a sword and go dominate anyone. He didn't launch some huge business. All his followers left him right at the point of his death. But I think the gentleness, the tenderness, and the vision of him, his visionariness. I mean, even if you don't agree with what he said, it's clear he's a historical figure, insane amount of documents on him. Just like he clearly was able to be secure in himself and have a vision that no one else was buying into and still stayed firm and anchored, right? And so I think of that. And I mean, and look how radical he was too, right? We're talking first century. You know, women were seen as second-class citizens, even actual, like they couldn't actually even give testimony in court because it wasn't valid. A lot of other different things in the first century. And then you got this guy, Jesus, who comes along and is basically like, you know, hanging out with them, talking to them, blessing them, having dinner with them, breaking down all the social barriers, right? And just saying like, no, that's dumb, right? And so I think I look at how he treated women, how he treated the lower, the orphans, I mean, not women, I mean, but like the lower of society of like orphans and prostitutes and the aliens and people who a lot of times our society can discard. And to me, that's the definition of masculinity of like, okay, your job is to go help and love and bless and serve, not try to make something big for yourself. Basically, his whole life was a life of service. And that's kind of how I define masculinity. Or another way to put it is, there's this crazy story where Jesus washes his disciples' feet, right? And again, first century, you know, they got their Air Hebrews on, you know, like these sandals just walking in the dust and the dirt. There's pigs and animals, you know, crapping on the street, and that's just like on their feet, and it's disgusting, right? It's literally like, this is not just people hate feet today, and we're like the most hygienic culture ever. Think about 2,000 years ago when it was just sandals and dirt, no showers, you know, and animal stuff. And so it was actually a job reserved for servants, 100% servants. No one, like, you didn't talk to the servant. They would come in under the table. Like, think about just how shameful this. Under the table, wash your feet. And Jesus, at this one story with his 12 followers, gets down on his hands and knees and washes Peter's feet. And then Peter is so repulsed by it because of the like, whoa, you're this head guy. Like, no, he goes like, no, don't do this. This is weird. And then Jesus says, if you don't let me do this, you have no part with me. Like, leave if you won't let me do this. And then when he's done, he says, and as I have done this, so should you. And to me, again, that's that picture of like, that's a true man, a man of service, of making himself low to lift others up. And a lot of times we invert that with manhood, right? We invert like, I'm all about dominating and powerful and I'm awesome and I'm up here and look at me and I'm going to crush everyone beneath me who's weak. That's just like fake, cheap, stupid power, right? And stupid masculinity. That's usually coming from a place of them not, you know, usually coming from the insecurity or the places where they haven't healed in their past. But yeah, that's what I think of.
Is there anything you haven't healed from yet in your past?
I think I've done some serious work the last couple of years, so I don't know if I can think of anything dramatically, but I do think there's always an ongoing journey. I think the fatherlessness stuff can sneak up. I think the insecurity stuff can sneak up. Yeah, I think of all that kind of stuff of like, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely still a journey, still a process, still in growth. And yeah, hopefully it'll be better tomorrow than today.
Yeah, yeah. A couple questions left for you guys, but make sure you guys get this book, Love That Lasts, How We Discovered God's Better Way for Love, Dating, Marriage, and Sex. Make sure you guys pick it up. Awesome read. A lot of cool stuff in here.
Thanks, man.
Final couple questions. This one is called The Three Truths.
Oh.
And if you know, you've got a lot of, in the intro of this interview, I'll talk about all the videos you've done and how I first discovered you from the Jesus.
Yeah, Greater Than Religion. Yeah,
video years ago. And I remember it being kind of like a, you know, leading the way for these types of videos and this type of content before its time, you know, years ago. Now everyone's doing that type
of stuff. Word, more artistic,
But let's say this is your last day many years from now, and you've written every book you wanted to write and done every video you want to do and all the things you wanted to create, you did.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they're erased from time. So no one has a copy of anything or can watch anything.
Yeah.
And you have a piece of paper and a pen, and you get to write down the three things you know to be true about everything you've experienced. That this would be your mentorship that you would pass on to the world. What would be your three truths or three lessons?
Man, see, that's why you're the best interviewer right there. First one, I would say is love God, love others. It puts everything in its rightful place. It seems to kind of, I almost have this like, you know, picture of everything kind of go just coming together and just snapping in place when you are, when there's an appropriate relationship with God, healthy, and then specifically loving others, love your neighbor as yourself, meaning like every person that you encounter today is another person with another story who, is not someone to be commodified, objectified, or taken advantage of, or used and abused, but is actually an opportunity for you to love and serve them. Second thing I would probably say is, I'd probably say stop drinking the toilet water. And what I mean by that is so many of us go our whole lives, 60, 70, 80 years drinking the toilet water. And what I mean by that is, If we're in a desert, right? Like if you just put me in, you know, I don't know, some desert and, you know, some field in Arizona or something like that, and I'm just about to, you know, there's no water, there's nothing to drink, there's no food, I'm dying of thirst, I haven't seen anyone, and I'm basically, you know, just that picture of just like the last day, I am legend status, right? Whatever. If you're in that setting and, you know, you're about to die and a toilet bowl shows up, like you're going to drink that toilet water and it's going to be incredible. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that's going to be the best toilet water you probably ever drank. It's going to taste really good. And you're going to be so glad that that toilet showed up. But if you're back home at your house and you're just kicking it and you're just like, oh, I'm thirsty. Where do you go? Right? You don't go to the bathroom. You go to the, like the fridge, right? Or the sink. And what I mean by that is, and on top of that too, you don't go by, you know, when you're walking by the bathroom, you don't walk by the bathroom and say, oh, okay, don't drink the toilet water. Don't drink the toilet water. You're just like, no, that's gross. Right?
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is because you have a superior pleasure. You have a superior thing that dwarfs the desire and the allure of the toilet water. And a lot of people, because we're emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically in a desert, then when the crap comes along, we not only drink it, but we actually, in that context, thinks it tastes good, right?
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like, you know, you can take super obvious examples like one night stands or something like that, right? Of just like people do that because it feels good. There's some, it's giving you something, right? And it's meeting some type of desire. But at the end of the day, it's not that it's like, you know, to take the religious conversation. It's not like, oh, you're going to hell if you have a one night stand. And so like, don't do it. It's like, no, you just, when you have something better, you don't walk by that. You just go, no, I'm good. Like, yeah. I don't need the toilet. Right. And so I think that's something I always tell people is like, you got to find the true water. You got to find the true water. What is that for you? What's that place of wholeness and flourishing and centeredness? Because when you have that, it dwarfs all the stuff that you're probably trying really, really hard sometimes to say no to.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a lot different conversation. And then lastly, what would be number three? Number three, I'd probably say, dude, these are good. These are good. I don't know. Like, I mean, no, I mean, like, this is what I said is going to mean these questions. I'm like, this is so good. You're making me think now. I'm going to go home and write you an email and say, here's my third one. I'd probably say the third one, have the right definition of love. Have the right definition of love. That will change everything. Most people think love's a feeling, and most people think love is about getting what you can get. I've found a profound implication and a profound life transformation when I realize love at its core is about seeking the highest good of the other. So it's not about taking, it's about giving. It's not about receiving, but it's about serving. And there's this secret backwards math equation if you want the recipe for joy and you're looking for it, go there. Go serve other people. Go love other people. Go lift up other people. Go sacrifice yourself on behalf of their dreams, their visions, their goals, and what they want. And you'll see that there's the joy of that. And obviously, I don't mean the acceptance of like someone trying to abuse you and take advantage of you. I just mean like go use your life for others. And you'll be surprised at how the thing you were looking for when you were trying to, you know, grab everything yourself, you found it in that option, not the one where you're trying to clutch and grab for it for yourself. And so that's what I would say.
Those are cool, man.
It's good.
I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Jeff, for your ability to make an impact in people's lives through your message, through your videos, your books, through your experience, and through sharing your experience with others, because it's not easy to talk about all the things that are going wrong or that your shortcomings and talk about those things openly, but you're making an impact through all the work you're doing. And I appreciate it, man.
Especially
for millennials who maybe feel the most uncertain about marriage, relationships, love, intimacy.
Yeah. And that was our hope with the book is we just kind of, like I told you, like we know nothing, right? Like love the last question mark should be the real title. But I just realized, man, like our peers, friends, you know, like people that I'm in community and life with, we're all asking really similar questions. Mm-hmm. And so if we had even like 2 cents of value, then I just wanted to hopefully get it out there.
I love it. Make sure you guys get the book. Love It Last. Where can we connect online with you, my man?
Search Jefferson Bethke or Alyssa Bethke anywhere, YouTube, social media, you know, Snapchat, Insta stories.
Where do you like to hang out the most?
Probably Instagram and YouTube.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah. Best, yeah.
It is. It is.
Awesome, man. Okay. Final question. What's your definition of greatness?
I thought you're like wrapping it up and like, and let's drop another bomb. Definition of greatness. Okay. This one might take a few minutes to break down, but I do feel like this one is something that really was helpful to me. And again, not to be the crazy Jesus guy, but let's go case study status. Okay. So we got 2 first century giants, Julius Caesar, Jesus, right? Historically speaking. Who cares what they say, what you believe about them, if you want to follow them or not. 2 giants in the first century. We know their names 2,000 years later. Who else can you really say that of? You know, about even our lives is not going to have that kind of impact most likely. We write about them. We talk about them. They both very much seemed to have a vision for the world and go for something. Let's compare the two, right? So you look at Julius Caesar. You look at Jesus. They both had a vision for the world. Jesus would obviously say something like the kingdom of God and kind of bringing restoration and peace and healing and blessing back to the earth would be his. And you have Julius Caesar. You could call it the Pax Romana, right? Everyone knows that. The peace of Rome, meaning like I'm going to... So similar. They sound similar, right? Like I'm going to bring in peace. I'm going to bring in order. I'm going to bring in everything to full fruition. So those seem similar. Okay, so now how did they achieve their visions, right? Now I would say very, very polar oppositely, right? So you got Caesar over here who said, okay, I have this vision and I'm going to get that vision how? By killing people. By the sword, whatever you want to call it, or by violence, or by coercion. Like I'm going to make people come under my reign and rule to achieve this vision, right? That's why they're one of the most military successful societies we've ever had.
Yeah.
They expanded and their empire was bigger than one of the ones, you know, any we've probably ever seen before with a couple rivals. And so that was how he wanted to achieve his vision. And that's how he went for it, is dominating, coercion, violence, and just trying to grasp and grab for it. But then you look at Jesus, okay, vision of the world, similar but different, peace, blessing, restoration of the world. And you look at him, okay, how did he achieve his vision, right? So he seemed to be the very polar opposite. He said, okay, I'm not going to kill for what I believe. I'm actually going to die for what I believe. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, make those like, I want to be a person who dies for what I believe, not kill what I believe, right? And metaphorically speaking, killing for what you believe is very easy. Trying to go grab it and take it and force it, anyone can do that, right? Try to actually have the courage to die for what you believe, that's a lot harder. Mm. It's a lot harder. He said, I'm not going to kill for what I believe, I'm going to die for what I believe, right? And then he goes and says, I'm not going to use violence, I'm actually going to, or coercion or force, I'm going to woo, right? You look at all these things, these sayings of Jesus, he never once says, you need to bow in submission. You need to do this, right? Mm. Or else you're going to get put up on a stake outside of the main highway coming into the city. But that sounds a lot like this guy over here, right? He never does that. He actually says, no. Here's my vision. I want to give you peace. I want to give you blessing. I want to give you joy. I want to give you a better vision for human flourishing and for yourself. Do you want in? Right? He keeps setting these tables. He has this picture of this table of like, you're invited to the table to feast with me, to have a relationship with me. You don't have to. You don't have to at all. Caesar doesn't do that. He forces, he coerces, and he does that. And then again, would you ever see Caesar washing anyone's feet? Probably not, right? Now think about impact, right? So you got these two polar opposite guys. This one says, I'm going to die for what I believe. And then think about how these two visions actually clashed. Like who actually killed this guy over here? This guy, right? Like the actual most brutal torture instrument ever invented by a human brain was invented by the Romans, crucifixion, right? And crucifixion, you actually didn't even die by being nailed to the cross. You died by asphyxiation. You died by suffocation because you were literally just hanging there where your lungs would start to collapse after about a day or two. They purposely invented it to bring the most pain and torture on someone. And Jesus actually comes basically into the head of that spear. And at that moment, who does it look like whose vision won? Looks like this guy's won, mm-hmm. right? Looks like Caesar's won. Looks like the force, the coercion, the power won. And then you got over here. I mean, look 2,000 years later. So now, in that day, it looks like this guy won. 2,000 years later, I mean, you can argue, obviously, you know, it still looks like there's a lot of crap out in the world. But from a pure impact standpoint, you got to say Jesus. You got to say Jesus. Mm-hmm. Billions of followers. Billions, right? So even if you disagree with them, even if you think he's just nonsense and crazy, you also have to agree with the fact he had a much, much, much bigger impact than the guy who believed in force and coercion and power and killing for what he believes. And so that's how I define greatness. I think, man, there's only two visions in the world, and I'm going to stay in this lane, right? The lane of service, the lane of sacrifice, the lane of not killing but dying for what I believe. And I think the numbers even speak for itself from a pure impact standpoint. It seems like even though in that moment he might have lost, it seems like in that moment there's a lot of people still talking about Jesus, not a very many people talking about Caesar, you know, or at least his vision. So, that's what I would say, greatness.
Great definition and probably the longest, Jeff. I appreciate
you,
Matt.
Thank
you so much. You're good. Rather appreciate you. And there you have it, my friends. If you enjoyed this one, make sure to let me know and share it with your friends. LewisHowes.com/550. Tag myself at Lewis Howes and Jeff over on social media and let us know what you enjoyed about this the most. Once again, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. It means a lot to me that you continue to listen. We've got some massive interviews coming up, and also a lot of you have been requesting for me to do more solo rounds, so I promise I'll be doing more of that here in the coming weeks as well. Got some big things to talk about, from the recap of Summit of Greatness and how it all went down. Also, so many other things that are happening behind the scenes that I want to share with you, but they just haven't come out yet, and I can't say them yet. So make sure to stay tuned for the following weeks of episodes. It's going to be a blast, guys, in the next couple weeks. So thank you guys again for all that you do to make a difference in your lives and in the world. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
We'll be right back. Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is here. It's Way Day. Right now, you can score up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar cards, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. All up to 80% off right now. Plus, everything ships free. And flash deals are launching all Way Day long. Don't miss Wayfair's biggest sale of the year. Shop Way Day right now, May 6th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.